Welcome to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that is all things technology agnostic. I am here with Christy Barber, one of our senior managers and small business specialist. And today we are focusing on our 2022 trend series and small to medium sized businesses. So welcome, Christy. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So throughout the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about the current state of small business and technology implementation, software selection, organizational change management, kind of covering the whole gamut of what it means to be a small business going into 2022. So let's jump in, Christy. So can you kind of give us an overview or a state of the industry for small businesses when it comes to technology starting out 2022?
Yeah, I think we've seen a lot of changes happen. And I think 2020 was kind of the push for a lot of small businesses that may have been running on pen and paper, Excel sheets, very old softwares to see in order for them to start competing with everybody else and keeping market share and all of that. As trends are moving, more people are going to additional types of software. They're getting away maybe from a brick and mortar. They're going online, and there's this need for a lot more technology and for it to play well with multiple softwares, not just, hey, we have one thing and then we keep track of it somewhere else. But I've seen a lot of small businesses over the last 2 years moving more towards, hey, we have a system that's really, really old. It's green screen and we need something that's cloud-based, or I need to start selling things online and I need it to come in and so I can track everything and see where it's going. And so that's the trend that I've seen, is a lot of small businesses, they have the money to do it and they're growing and they're seeing this need that they got to be able to keep up with everybody else.
Absolutely. And would you say that we're kind of in the climate of forced transformations for a lot of these companies, just with the state of COVID-19 and then also labor shortages and things like supply chain challenges? Is that something that you're kind of seeing with your clients?
Yeah, and I've seen it as an overall trend too, even with being able to automate things, going back to what you're saying with labor shortages of, we can't find the right people, or there's not enough people that want to work anymore. And how do we still keep our company going? And finding technology that can automate certain processes or be able to have people wear multiple hats in a certain way, but the software helps them be able to manage multiple roles. So I've seen that come into play. And I'm sure you guys have seen it too when you're out at Chick-fil-A or McDonald's, you can order a lot of things from an app now, so you don't have to have as many cash registers, and how technology is playing that kind of role with customer service even.
Absolutely. Eric and I talked actually a few weeks ago on our Ground Control podcast about Taco Bell's new completely automated ordering system that's even automated from preparing the food and then delivering it throughout the drive-through. So, and a lot of those order takers are actually at home, which surprised me. That's a, you know, a workforce that isn't even in the actual infrastructure of the business. So that's pretty interesting.
When
it comes to supply chains specifically, we know a lot of global supply chains are being stressed and really challenged right now. Is that happening within the small to medium sized business community as well?
I've seen it a lot, especially companies that use metal and different products like that, where it's coming outside the US and they're waiting for it. There's long lead times. They've maybe had to purchase from different vendors. It's a higher cost. I've had some clients, they buy 12 foot bars of stainless steel. And normally it's ordered overseas and it's X dollars. And now they're having to go within the States. There's some suppliers that have it, but then there's an actual, you know, a little bit, you know, more expensive cost to that and being able to get it on time, or they're having to switch to a different product. Is there something else that I can still make, but I can substitute for a different type of material or component and still give my client the best product ever? And so people are shifting and being able to keep up in that way so they can have money coming in and products still going out the door for their customers.
Yeah, and I can imagine for a small business that may not be as flexible or as cash heavy that managing inventory right now could be challenging as well. And just the fact that I know, for example, a lot of our supply chain experts have said when going into 2022, it might make sense to have bigger inventory than you typically would have. And I would assume as a small business, you just don't have that additional budget to invest in that type of inventory.
Or if you do, you're having to use a line of credit or you're taking out a loan to be able to bring in extra inventory. And I have a client, they do about $5 million a year and they bought, I don't know, probably $250,000, $300,000 of inventory at the end of last year because they're so afraid that they're going to run out of product this year. And it puts a strain on them from a cash flow perspective. But if they can continually sell and make the product, it helps them at the end of the day, and then they have more money to go out and buy additional, but it's hard, and they've had to leverage line of credit to be able to purchase that. And you've seen probably in some of the other people you've talked with, most companies now, they keep really lean inventories because it's expensive. The more you store, the more space it takes up. And so we've all moved to this lean inventory management. And now when you have events like this, it kind of gets you because you think, oh, I keep, 25 of these on hand. And when I get to 5, I reorder and they'll be in 2 days. Now it could be 2 months, it could be 6 months before those products get in. So I have seen that a lot. Just, it's stressful.
Absolutely. So is there a way that technology can help optimize or enable these challenges for small businesses specifically?
Yeah, you can use... Within the softwares, you have different purchase order requirements. You can forecast, you can change the analytics within there. So you could say, hey, maybe I keep 100 of these on the shelf. Now when I get to 90, I need to reorder because it's 4 months to get it. And you can change your min-max levels. You can look at trends and look at your suppliers, how call them up. How long is this gonna take? Because I need to be able to adjust my ordering to be able to make those deadlines. And I think it's going in using, leveraging your analytics, leveraging your forecasting, and really just diving into it from a whole different way that most businesses haven't had to in the past.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So for some of your clients, obviously a lot of these new pressures or the current business climate can be challenging, like we just discussed. What are some nuances when selecting the best technology for a small to medium-sized business? What are some things specifically that these clients need to consider that maybe some of our larger global organizations don't have to?
I would say the larger companies usually don't have to worry about costs and certain modules, where when you're a smaller company, you can build. So for instance, let's say you can do a more phased approach to an implementation. Today, I want to start with just, let's build finance out. And maybe we try that. And for the next 6-8 months, we just finance is on the system. And then we phase in manufacturing, phase in distribution, all of these things where it can help from a cost perspective of leveraging time and people to get something done, where of a large corporation, we have enough employees, we have enough funds where we can do a full ERP implementation for everything and get it done in 6 to 8 months, where smaller companies, they may not have the ability to do that. So I think it's a plus and minus. It's a good thing that you can phase an implementation in, but then sometimes it's like, oh man, this is great, but I wish this part was in here also. So I think just kind of keeping in mind of what is really important in your implementation and what you need as far as software today, or is it, hey, I have a current software today. I know we've talked about this in a lot of previous podcasts and even articles. I'm on QuickBooks, but QuickBooks doesn't manage inventory. I got to go get a third-party software. Does it make sense for me today to just get a third-party inventory management software? Because that'll get me through the next year and I can save and then get an ERP in a year. That's where some smaller companies, they can leverage that of, I'm going to spend $3,000 today and this will get me through, as opposed to $100,000.
Right. And so with that prioritization of different objectives that you have for your business strategies, do you find that a lot of times small to medium-sized businesses are looking at more of a best-of-breed solution versus an ERP? Or what does that look like as far as what you recommend for them?
I think it kind of depends what industry they're in, where they are in their growth stage. Are they startup? Are they been around for a while? Are they growing like crazy? And what makes the most sense? Most of the softwares and the clients I've worked with this year, they've gone full ERP with some nuances of some best of breed software coming in. So for instance, I've had a handful of clients go in NetSuite, and then they want to bring in bill.com because they had to use bill.com with QuickBooks to pay everything. And that made more sense for them because they're used to it. They like it. And instead of using what would be in the software, I think it makes more sense when you're a manufacturing company and you're actually building everything, that best of breed makes sense to a certain extent. But if you don't need it day one, I think having whatever is out of the box within the ERP system is more cost effective. And then as you grow and you have more unique components of how you do your work, then you're bringing in maybe additional software that helps kind of patch what those unique parts are with you.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a great conversation, Christy. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back to Digital Stratosphere.
If you are involved in any sort of digital transformation or business change initiative, you will want to download the 2021 Digital Transformation Report. With its comprehensive overview of business and technology trends and best practices, this report is a must-have guide for any transformation project or executive team. Download this free report by visiting Third Stage Consulting at thirdstage-consulting.com. You can also visit our website to learn more about us or download independent reports, videos, and other best practices. Again, visit thirdstage-consulting.com today to learn how to take your transformation to the third stage of success.
Welcome back to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast of all things technology agnostic. We are here with Christy Barber, our small business specialist, talking about small businesses in 2022. So let's jump back in. I can imagine, and obviously you're the expert, so you know way better than me, but when you are a small business, like you mentioned, you wear a lot of hats and you may have the expertise in the service or product you provide, but the technology, you know, you might not have someone on staff that is, you know, the head of ERP, like a lot of the bigger organizations we work with do. What are the role of software vendors within kind of, or implementation partners in more of a general space within that kind of dynamic? Because I assume it would be really easy for software vendors to go into a small business that may not have the expertise and say, like, you need A, B, and C, and that person be completely overwhelmed. And maybe that is what they need, or maybe it isn't. But it would seem kind of an easy sale to be able to kind of maybe give them some things they might not need. So I wondered if you could give us kind of your perspective and maybe give us some insights for our small business listeners when they are working with partners throughout their digital transformation.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is making sure your partners, so your implementation partner, or if you end up going with direct, there's kind of two different ways they can go. I've seen a lot more partners show up this year as opposed to the software companies using their direct implementation team, but making sure they spend a lot of time with you and getting to know who you are, how you do your business. And I've seen partners walk through, and I think this is really important, what is your business process for each department in your company? And we do this in our requirements and when we're building all of that out, but if you're doing this on your own, making sure they understand where are those decision points, where are some pain points that are happening along the way, because we need to identify if there's no pain here, if there is, how is that workflow going to happen inside the software? Am I going to need a different module because the out-of-the-box standard module does not handle this? And it could be something as simple as I need to do serialization and lot numbers. And yeah, it handles it out of the box, but if I got the the advanced manufacturing module, it's going to do all these other things that I'm going to need. And so having this company understand what your goals are today and where you want to be into the future, that's going to help. And if your future state is sooner rather than later, it may make more sense to, yep, we need this advanced module today as opposed to just out of the box, because otherwise we're going to be going through this process in 3 months. But then the flip side is you don't want to be oversold either, and you have all these extra products that you don't need. And I think going back to those processes, that's a great way to outline what you really do need at the end of the day, and making sure, again, going back to where do you want to be in the future? What is your end goal of this software, your business goals, all of that, and then work backwards to what you need. And I think that's the accountant in me too. I always like to work backwards. What is my end goal? And then let me work backwards to put together a plan to be able to accomplish that goal.
Absolutely. And speaking of, you know, that future state and planning, what are some strategies or tactics that our small business community should make sure they have included in their implementation plan in 2022?
I would say, gosh, there's a handful, but I think most important thing is when you're planning your implementation, and even before you have signed on with that implementation partner, looking at that scope. What is the budget overall? Is there a budget in there when you need X number of change orders or configurations? Does it include monies to cover any third-party integrations you may have? Those are big things you want to make sure you're planning and have a budget for, because they all cost something, and it's time and the integration of that and with the vendors coming together. That's a good thing. And then looking at the cost of retiring old software and how much you spent on that, and then how much budget are you going to have once it's gone that's going into the new software. And so thinking from a monetary perspective of planning from that way of cost, because it's an investment, and you want to make sure that when you're going through that process that there are going to be change orders that pop up. Whether you want it or not, they always do happen. It may not be many, but there's always some, and that the budget is there. So just planning ahead of time for all of that, making sure you have a good team internally that can help support the implementation. And we've talked about that in demo plan or in a lot of our training as well, as you have this core team, and this core team is going to be who helps with the implementation. And then they'll have multiple teams within each of those groups that bring in additional knowledge and testing the software. And that's a big thing of making sure you don't do an implementation during the busiest time of year. That might be now for some people, maybe the end of the year, middle of the year. An implementation should be done usually after your busy season, so you can manage testing and anything that could happen and making sure your product is getting out the door.
Those are all great recommendations, for sure. And I think one I kind of want to dig into is the internal team. Just, we know for our SMB clients, like you said, and we've talked about multiple times within this conversation, is we wear multiple hats at a small business. So how do they handle things that we know are super important to project success, like project management, and having those dedicated resources to make sure any sort of technology implementation, upgrade, or anything like that is successful?
Yeah, so sometimes they'll bring in a third-party project manager. We'll come in and help with an implementation. They may be hiring a specific role for that stays on in their company and then moves out of PM to IT management if they're really small. They also are looking to do they're going to handle a lot of the risks associated with it. So you're going to need somebody in this PM position that can understand what are the risks of the implementation, where are places when change management may be a problem because we have a people problem at the time. They're sold on it and now we're doing testing and you're like, oh gosh, you know, I used to do it this way. The system wants me to do it this way. I don't like it. And these people are going to help manage that transformation of We're going to get you from here to here. We're going to help make sure that our vendors, when they're doing the implementation, that they're staying on the timeline and we're not falling off. They're going to look at the client as well. Are we keeping up with the timeline? Did so-and-so not turn in a data sheet so we could get this uploaded into the system? That's a lot of the project management that will be happening, as well as just a lot of the internal conversations with the client and making sure that everybody's doing their testing, their data has been brought over, it's clean, it's ready to go, the processes look right, we don't have bugs. All of that's a lot of what the PM does. And there's also QA in that also, but pretty much that's what it is. It's just following that timeline, making sure that, hey, if we said it's gonna take 6 months, we gotta keep on it.
Right, so outsourcing maybe an option for that, or allocating a new role within your overall community or workforce. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, both of those things, like you said, have risks associated with it, and coupled with the cost that you had, you know, when Nike fails a digital transformation that costs them $100 million, they're kind of like, oh, that's a bummer, you know, but they're not going to go bankrupt. Like,
no,
which is a real risk for some of these businesses, I assume. So how do you help them understand the significant risks and then plan for anything that could really take them off track within that?
So we like to keep risk logs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they're fun. Color code them and get them all going. So we'll have those. And usually I like to identify, you're always going to have people risks, you're going to have process risks, and you're going to have tech risks. And then from there, putting together a plan of how to mitigate those. People problems, hey, I don't like the software, or there's bugs, it's not doing what I want it to do with some of the tech stuff. The processes, I don't like this process, it's too many steps, or it's not exactly how it should be. How are we gonna fix that? Those are the three categories I would say that show up a lot. And then once we put together these risk logs, it's who's in charge of this risk, I would say. And is that it's usually assigned to the PM and then somebody on the client's team. How are we going to fix this and either mitigate it, take care of it so it doesn't show up again? One thing that I've seen happen a lot is when we're doing the data migration, mm-hmm. there may be multiple people that have to pull the data and the data is not coming over correctly. They're so busy because it could be end of the month, end of the quarter, and you're counting on your accounting team to bring over a lot of this data and they don't have the bandwidth to do it. So that becomes a risk that then may make your implementation run longer than what it should be. And then that also incurs costs. So for every time you don't hit a deadline, there's costs incurred in that because now we're pushed out an additional week.
Absolutely. And I assume kind of within the planning process, or like kicking off the project, you go through all of these potential risks, mm-hmm. just so they're aware of what that looks like.
Yeah, and then we'll put together a pretty clean timeline. Usually the implementation partner will provide that, and then we'll go in, if we're the PM on it, fill in the places where we'll be, you know, really coming in and working hard on a certain topic, or we're kind of sitting back, we'll QA something. And so, and then we'll also assign particular items to the client where they're responsible.
And so when it comes to the people side of those risks, or the overall strategy, I know you personally, Christy, come from a family of entrepreneurs and understand what it can be to be a family multi-generational business, or, you know, have people that have been within the business community and holding that tribal knowledge in that spreadsheet for 40 years. Mm-hmm. So how do you help them understand the need for organizational change management within their overall transformation?
It's hard. Mm-hmm. People get so used to, well, I just know this. You don't need to know because I know this. And you have to think, eventually you're going to retire. Yeah. And I need to know what you know. And coming at it from a different way of, you know everything, you're the expert, and I need you to teach me your knowledge and expertise, and being able to extract that out of their head and document it, whether it's an S&OP, it's just data that's written into the system. it's tricky, and there has to be some good tactics around it so you don't get people opposed to, hey, you're trying to steal my job from me.
Yeah.
I'm the one that knows all this. Now you're making a software do it. I don't like how that feels. Mm-hmm. And reassuring, hey, it's not. We're actually taking all of your knowledge, we're putting it here, we're making your job a little bit easier so you can move off from some tactical items and do more strategic type work. And I've even seen that with my own family. You know, it's like, I always say the third generation, and I'm sure for all of you family-owned businesses out here, the third generation usually comes in, kind of ruffles things up, and the fourth generation has to come in and save things. And I'm a fourth generation in a family business, and we've kind of seen that of some changes do have to happen. We're moving more towards technology. We're getting away from post-it notes and just this tribal knowledge like you talked about, and I need to document it somewhere. So when somebody retires, they don't want to work here anymore, the knowledge is still there and we're not scrambling to try to find out how to do something.
Absolutely. Those fourth generationers, man, they really just are
disruptors. They put it back together.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. So when we talk about, when we round out our conversation here and the benefits are all over ROI, obviously there are some key performance metrics that showcase success of a transformation. What are some other things that you help your clients see the business value in their new technology?
I would say time. That's, and you're going to see it as a KPI also, but you're going to see it just in your employees. A lot of times you'll see this in, we'll go with the accounting side. They may be individually putting in invoices one by one. Now maybe you can batch them and it takes a much shorter amount of time. You're not having to scan things in because there's OCR inside of an ERP and it can look at the invoice and it puts it into the system. All you got to do is check to make sure it's correct and go. There's three-way matching that's easier. So you're taking what somebody may do and it, I don't know, maybe on an average day, they spend 4 hours. Now they're spending an hour and a half each day. So they have this extra block of time that they're working on other things to hit additional business goals or future business goals that a company has. You can see the same thing with scheduling on the manufacturing side. Now, as soon as I enter a work order in, the software is going to say, hey, you know what? We're going to put on the calendar for this date. Does that work? And then you may just adjust it, or, you know, you're not spending so much time having to do a lot of these jobs that are taking up pretty much a lot of your day. I know some people, their older softwares where they're green screen, they have to extract a report. The report maybe takes an hour or so to extract, and they're manually going through it in Excel, trying to see what are my sales orders that are still open. Now you click, you have a report, here's what it is, done 20 minutes every day. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to see a lot of that. And I've seen too, it takes the burden off of people, like, oh, I don't have to spend so much time doing this one task. And now I can actually get other things done. There's a difference in their cadence or how they can appear, even in the culture of the company. You're causing a shift.
That's all. I mean, those are all great things, because truly we know the benefits of a technology isn't just quantitative metrics. It's also the qualitative, intangible things like company culture and being able to scale for growth and mm-hmm. those types of things. Anything else you want to share with our SMB community about 2020 before we wrap up?
Or 2022?
Or 2022. I miss the last year.
The years go by, but I don't feel like they really moved anywhere.
That's going to take me until 2023 to get right.
2023, exactly. I would say, I think now is just a good time to start evaluating where you want your company to go. And technology is moving quickly. As you probably heard on other podcasts of ours and our articles, if things are changing even from where they were last year or the year before that significantly. And it's a good time for small business to evaluate what's going to make the most sense for them. Is it an ERP system? Is it upgrading their system? Is it changing? Maybe it's project management software, et cetera. But it's just a time, I think, that if you don't look at it now, you may be looking back thinking, gosh, I wish I had have done this. I mean, we all think about that. Hey, we all should have bought Google back in the day because we would have been retired by now, but we didn't do it. And I think it's the same thing for small businesses. It's just keeping on top. And even though it may be painful and you're adverse to new technology or the cost is in the way, it still makes sense sometimes to take those risks on yourself and your business.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time and insight today.
Thanks.
Christy. It's been great to have you, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. We put out new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So please subscribe to our channel, and we will see you next week.